KFYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
Perceptia here. Welcome to Transformers for your listening pleasure. TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop? Ratchet, can you take the chorus stop? Transformers! Defenders
of truth! Robots who fight in disguise! Hello, everyone, and welcome to TFYLP, Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, episode number 245, recorded May 6th, 2017. I'm your host, Ron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf. Along with me this evening is Jack Bruner.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
Jim Black.
What's going on, everybody?
And we are also joined by our very special guest this afternoon, Mr. Greg Berger. Welcome to
TFYLP. Meet Grimlock, meet Dinobot leader.
We really want to thank you for being on the show this afternoon. But before we go into our show, I want to take a brief moment to thank our sponsors that help keep the lights on here. CapturePrey.com, great toys, great prices, great service. CapturePrey.com, where you can save even more with orders over $150 with free domestic shipping. Also, you can check out Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection while minimizing your costs with MegaToyFan.com. And you can find Mega Toy Fan at the largest toy conventions year-round, such as TFCon Canada and USA, coming up later this year. MegaToyFan.com. Also, if you are a big fan of TFYLP and love what we do here, we can't do it without your help. Down there at the bottom of the screen, check out our link to our Patreon at patreon.com/TFYLP. I want to thank everybody that helps us each month to keep the server bills paid and keep the bandwidth going here. It's a expensive thing to do, but also very fun. And you know, it's not every day we get to say hi to a legend, and today we do that, just that, with Mr. Greg Berger. Thank you for joining us today. How are you this evening?
Doing good. Till all are one, we'll just keep doing all together. But I'm very happy to be here. I only go where I'm invited, so thanks for the invite. And happy to share whatever is rattling around in my brain.
Awesome. Yeah, it's obvious that from the top of the show that everybody knows that you did Grimlock in the original Transformers cartoon. What other G1 characters did you
do? I'm looking at that's a very nice one. I was also Long Haul. Remove, construct a concept to form Devastator, but no one was kind enough to let me know I'd be somewhere around a crotchal area. Anyway, it's a tough job, but somebody has to do it. And I didn't join that outfit to be no dump truck, I'll tell you that. However, happy to be a Constructicon. Also, Skyfire. So I was in the ice for an extended period of time. Created Decepticon, discovered Autobot. This is a conflicted character who I love doing, and showed up one day and found out, I guess there were legal modifications of the name Skyfire. That was the day Skyfire became Jetfire, and so I continued as Jetfire. I did Outback, so I was off to the Outback now and then, and being a brown Transformer. Now, there's some discussion about that, because I think Dan Gilbazan did some episodes as Outback, and I know how many I did as Outback. So I guess somehow it was split. I don't know if it was... I don't know any more about that, but I think we both lent our voice to Outback.
It's kind of probably one of those shared things. I know sometimes I know we had Paul Eiding on last year, and he said sometimes if somebody wasn't available for a particular recording session, sometimes somebody would kind of fill in with a grunt or a growl here and there. Or even a few lines if necessary.
Presumably that happened. I think that's as far as I can sort of figure it out. Throw a Decepticon on the Bobby for me.
Can you tell us a little bit about how? Let's start at the very beginning. How did you get into voice acting?
Actually, I'm an actor, and even when I teach or coach, I think the emphasis has got to be on the word acting. And if you figure out a character in three dimensions, if you do your homework, the voice will follow. You'll never get confused between characters because they're each their own persona, and they each, it's like a stable of friends that you have access to. But it's not so much that you're doing voices as that you're doing characters who are voice driven. Even when I was doing repertory and stage, I have a major in theater and a minor in English. Even then, I would always sort of voice define characters first. That was always the key to the third dimension for me. So, I mean, it's a passion, and I did my homework. I would say between theater and improv, that's the best schooling you can have for staying in the moment, listening as much as you are talking, and staying connected to material. You know, Grimlock was a gift. The thing about being fortunate enough to do a series in an animated series is that you get to find out the arcs, and you every week you show up and find out more about the character. And obviously Grimlock went through everything, including a new brain, which he opted wisely to give back or give to Computron. The humor of the show largely came from him and through him, and just Cups war stories and Petro rabbits and,
you know,
cesium salami and beryllium bologna.
There's actually a question I have about that particular episode, Grimlock's New Brain, one of my favorite episodes of all time. Matter of fact, I actually keep a copy of it on my phone to watch while I'm at work sometimes. Did you do the both voices? I mean, obviously you did the normal voice for Grimlock, but did you do like the super intelligent voice for him as well?
Yes, I did. Actually, I did. I had to make some pronounal changes because I, Grimlock, became very wise very quickly. Actually, I've talked to some artists from just various incarnations of Grimlock, and I guess there's some schools that he was always intelligent and kind of found it easier to operate under a less intelligent appearing persona. I mean, I just went with what I was handed, which was big muscles, small brain. So he was aggressive. He was, you know, ready, fire, aim. So I went with what I was given.
Plus the fact that my jaw was locked, and so when I first
did the audition and early episodes, I used to try to imagine hinging myself. I like doing the detective work or figuring out where a character is coming from. He was fun from the get-go. He was aggressive from the get-go. He was a badass who couldn't quite put things together as quickly as maybe some other Autobots, but he was always ready to act. You know, actions speak louder than words, and his for sure. Mm-hmm. Plus a whole lot of fun built in and relationships. He had, he had an opinion about everything and everybody.
Yes, he did. Looking briefly at your IMDb, I'm looking at the very bottom one, the very first one. It lists Transor Z, English version in 72. Yeah, that's so actually, Transformers was not your first foray into giant robots.
Or Shogun Warriors. Mazinga Z, as huge as it was in Japan, we did an American version of it. Mazinga Z became Transor Z. I was Tommy Davis. I was the kid who operated the exoskeletal, and I was Dev Lean, who was half man, half woman, half... who knows? But pure evil. So yeah, that goes. That Sherman set the Wayback Machine for ancient Rome. That was early on, and it was all done ADR to picture. And in those days, nothing was digital yet, so they actually had film loops. They had to rewind in real time, as opposed to just go back to a marked spot to redo. And then, just like doing dubbing for film, there would be three beeps. Fourth beep would hit. And that would be you talking. So it's kind of like putting jigsaw puzzles together. It also, that kind of voicing involves a middleman who's an adapter who listens to whatever foreign language track it is and tries to adapt, keeping all of the meaning, but going more to filling the flaps with English words. So whenever you see a dubbed product or a looped product, unfortunately, what sticks out more than the part that works, which everybody labors to make happen, is the parts that don't work, where the flaps maybe get seemingly out of sync, but it's only because you're lending your voice to an already existing visual.
Yeah,
much easier to do a radio play and give the animators something to animate to. Mm-hmm. That's the preferred all the way around.
Is that the way G1 was done? It was
absolutely.
Now you talked about matching the lip flaps of the cartoon characters and stuff. I watched thankfully to Netflix. You can go back and watch older shows like the original Voltron. I noticed, it's like they didn't bother trying to match the lip flaps from the Japanese animation. It was just good storytelling, good fun storytelling. And sometimes, whenever you just let the actors do what they're doing and let the animation tell the story, you don't have to worry about, the little minute details of like, well, his lips didn't match. Sometimes I actually prefer that type, but and I'm sure the voice actors do too, because not having to time it that well.
You're not restricted and you're not limited. You're just storytelling. Mm-hmm. Now, as far as original product and how much has happened technologically and digitally, just through the years, and keeping in mind what you just said about storytelling, I mean, I've been fortunate enough to do conventions all over the world at this point, Australia, New Zealand, UK, all over. And I really, not only do I love the convention experience, but I love the opportunity to meet with people one-on-one. And a teacher who had either elementary or I guess they were elementary school students, and he said, he's a Transformers fan, so he introduced it just into the classroom as far as more information about their teacher. But I guess he found out from a lot of them that at that time Prime was kind of drawing them into the franchise, but the Hub at that time was running G1 immediately after in sequence. So they went for this extremely high-tech experience, but they all stayed and preferred, back to your comment about story, they got really drawn in by G1, even though if you compare the two products, just technologically, there's no comparison, and yet there's a purity about G1 combined with very, very well-defined contrasting characters who you really understood the dynamic of their relationship, and they were drawn in, and they became rabid G1 fans, once they got introduced to the story, they wanted to stick with it.
Well,
I think that's fantastic.
It is. You know, a lot of people knock the original cartoon because, I mean, it was, you know, it had a lot of animation errors from time to time, and the overall stories tended to be lean more toward the cheesy side. But that's that type of cartoon. You know, you have the archetypal villain in Megatron, and, you know, he lays out his plans and is foiled every episode. But that's what makes it fun. You know, it's the ride and the stories. You know, Grimlock became a central character early on. There is a reason that people have grown to love this character so much.
There's always a reason, and I have to believe, first of all, I mean, this goes to just what we were all experiencing as we were giving birth to it, because you get back feedback that it's being well received, and then when you find out you're picked up and it's going into subsequent seasons, you know, it's all great, but at the outset you can't see around the next curve. But it was a very dedicated group of cast and crew who were all trying, and this goes straight to Wally Burr, to make the best storytelling, the best project that we could do. People worked very hard for Wally, and Wally insisted that everyone work very hard. But look at the result. Look at the longevity. And, you know, he created this energy field. I have to believe that there are really good shows that somehow escape that identifiability phase, where an audience, for whatever reason, didn't find it or didn't embrace it or whatever. We end up being the example of when it does work, when it immediately gets sort of embraced and people have a vested interest in their favorite characters, in the story, you know. But it's a big deal for something, for reasons that we may or may not understand, to catch on like that, to be embraced like that, to be held high like that, and to still be held high like that. And that goes straight to these convention generation that I meet, who have so many stories about what it meant to them at whatever time of their lives, and they've introduced their kids to it. It's spectacular. I'm a terminal optimist. It'll kill me someday.
Well, that actually leads right into the last episode of this podcast that we did. We had all of our younger under 25. Cast on, and we talked about the hobby and the fandom of Transformers from the viewpoint of those under 30, the people that didn't grow up with the original Transformers, and how they view it. You know, it's one thing for those such as myself and Jim. You know, I remember the very first episode as it aired way back in 1984.
Wow.
You know, so I was there for it. You know, I was a diehard He-Man fan, and then I saw Transformers, and I'm like, He-Man, what? You know,
Tell Skeletor.
Yeah, I actually did tell Elena Oppenheimer about that. But yeah, I mean, Transformers just had that allure to me, still to this day. I mean, I surround myself with glass cases full of Transformers that are largely original Generation 1 characters. And there's a reason for that. You know, a lot of people, they attribute the comics and everything. I'm very much a cartoon guy. I love the original cartoon. Have every episode of it on DVD. I've watched them countless times. I own 3 or 4 different versions of the animated movie on different formats, you know, recently on Blu-ray.
Yeah.
And, you know, why own the same movie several times is because I love it that much. It is it is my favorite movie of all time. I can watch that movie. I can, you know, repeat the lines, you know, like I was a kid again, you know. And it's just a darn good movie and a rocking soundtrack, you know. So
yes, me Grimlock, no kisser.
But you know,
Ron, Ron, you saying that reminds me back in like middle school and high school, you know, close to 20 years ago, there once was a time where I used to be able to quote the movie from start to finish verbatim.
Wow.
I had the whole thing memorized because I watched it that much.
Yeah. I mean,
I didn't have cable at the time, so, you know, I didn't really have too much to keep me occupied. So, you know,
I wore out my VHS.
You want to leave some brain space for math and science, though.
I can still quote it, but in my age, I'm starting to slip now. I'll misremember things, you know. But you know,
sadly. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to ask Jack. You weren't able to be on the last episode, and
I was
you
not.
Are definitely under the age of 25.
Yep.
So, tell us what is your thoughts on the original? You just recently saw the original cartoon in its entirety.
I did. A friend of mine lent me the DVD, the Shout Factory versions, and I managed to watch it over like 2 months, I think it was. And it just, because originally I didn't think too highly of it. I decided pretty much, you know, set the foundation for what Transformers would become. But after rewatching every episode, it was just like, wow. Pretty much. And pretty much gave me a new viewpoint on all these different characters. I thought there was one. I know Grimlock was one of them. I can't think of any others, though. So, but yeah, it pretty much gave me a new viewpoint.
Hey, if you got to choose one, that was nicely
that
done.
Was, I know that was one of them. I just can't think of the others.
While you're there, I got to give a shout out to Shout Factory and props to Brian Ward. Not only for they cared so much about the product. I think that presentation was like spectacularly aware of the franchise and a fan's dream as far as somebody who gets it. There's a bonus features on the Shout Factory DVDs, and they got us all together, or as many as they could round up, back into a room. And I mean, you can probably tell already I'm kind of a blabbermouth, and it doesn't take much to get me started.
That's perfectly okay.
A blabbermouth. But we hadn't seen each other for quite some time, and there was a big separation of time from the product itself. And Brian got us into a room, and he had some sort of starter questions just to get the conversation going. But several people in the room said, I don't even know what to talk about. I don't know what to. But the way it worked out, because we all had so much history with each other, is he just sort of set the tape, the digital recording on, and kind of said, go. And we all just started kicking it around. And the next thing anybody knew, he said, we're out of recording space. We have to stop now or reset or do something else. We spent so much time because there was a lot of, I'm sure you got this from Flint, but there would be rewriting and adapting and massaging mm-hmm. of script and stuff during sessions. So that allowed us all this time in the parking lot, in the green room, just all over the studio to sort of form these friendships, many of which have stayed firmly in place. I'm still in touch with a lot of people from G1, and so many of us have had not only that experience, but careers that are still going strong, strong, strong. I mean, that speaks to the casting and just the chops of everybody. But, you know, you don't know if you're going to have a series or if you're going to have a career. Well, many of us have had careers, many if not most. It was a really incredible stable of thoroughbreds is what
many
it comes
of
down
many
to.
Of the characters, if you look at or the talents on the original Transformers, is an ensemble cast. I mean, have everyone from Peter Cullen, who's now gone on to several live action movies as the voice of Optimus Prime, and Frank Welker. I mean, the busiest man in Hollywood as well. I mean, there's hardly a movie goes by you hardly see his name in the credits for something. You know, maybe it was a voice of a trash can or something. But
right.
but then you have Roger C. Carmel, who was Harry Mudd in the original Star Trek.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I mean, there's so many wonderful names. I forget his real name right off the top of my head. I had it. He voiced Triptychon, but he went on to play in star in
Brad Garrett.
Brad Garrett. Everyone Brad Loves Garrett, Raymond.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I had no idea he was a guy from Everyone Loves Raymond. You know,
there were a lot of people. In oh yeah, and yep. And anytime Scatman brought his ukulele, nice. You know, we just he'd hold court outside. You never want to go back in, and when you get to the feature, I just did the final BotCon with Judd Nelson, and that was a great reunion. Just so many terrific people along the way, and everybody dedicated to make the product the best it could be. Sort of grounded actors doing essentially radio plays with massive effects and music and picture to come. So we created essentially radio plays before we left the studio.
Yeah. Now, as we are in a currently a live format right now, we do have a live chat going on our YouTube channel. So if you are watching us live, feel free to join the live chat and ask questions. And if we have time, we'll ask Mr. Berger. Frank Marzegliano, he just asked a question. Let's see here. How much influence over the voice actors did influence did voice actors have over actual dialogue in the original Transformers?
You know, in different projects are different, and I won't say we didn't take advantage of any opportunity to sort of fool around, but Wally was a pretty firm taskmaster, and the word, if the words were right on the page, then we sort of stuck to it verbatim. But there was so much just loosening everything up and having fun on our side of the glass, sometimes to the frustration of the people on the other side of the glass, including Flint, where people would say, can we just get back to what we're here to do and stop clowning around and just maybe make a show? Is that okay with anybody? I was kind of the new kid when I came in, and I was standing in the presence of people I had incredible respect for, and I got to learn while I earned, and I wasn't ever going to miss, for lack of a better description, I wasn't ever going to trip in the jump rope, no matter how fast the jump rope was going. So I had to up my game. But when Wally called me to tell me that he said, I have good news. He actually said, I have good news and bad news. I said, what's the good news? He said, they want you for Grimlock. I said, what's the bad news? He said, can you sustain what you did in the audition? I said, I said, well, you better damn well believe I'm going to. I'll do whatever. I'm not letting go of nothing. Never.
So many stories of bleeding throats and and everything coming out of.
I think I was the guy who always asked whether those were my tonsils on the glass as I was leaving. Did I just spit my tonsils out?
Listener Lotus Stark, he says, do you collect actual representations of Grimlock, whether it's an actual toy, art, animation sales, anything like that of the character?
It's not so much that I'm a collector as that I've been allowed to acquire things along the way. I've been gifted with things along the way. I have a masterpiece Grimlock that was gifted to me. Occasionally we would get toys as they came in, new things as they got introduced. I have some scripts I've held on to because they mean something to me. I've had just memorabilia, and of course the VCRs, which became the DVDs, which became the Blu-rays. So I have things that are very meaningful to me, but I'm not a collector's collector where I'm avidly like running around the floor of Comic-Con on trying to get exclusives. but I so appreciate the passion of anybody who is, And honestly, I mean, I tend to tie things to other things just because it's the way I am. But I'm not afraid of any generation who's passionate about anything. It's just once it gets into whatever that I start to get a little concerned. Because if there's nothing to get excited about, what's the point? You know, get busy doing something somewhere. Well, into a studio and make some art.
You've been a part of so many franchises, not just Transformers. G.I. Joe, for example, you voiced Spirit, Cutter, and several others. You want to talk a little
Rip
bit about
Ripcord? Yeah. Ripcord and Firefly. I like to blow stuff up.
And then there's also
Shout Factory took on G.I. Joe in brilliant fashion too. Mm-hmm. Another great marketing presentation package. Same real fiery guy, Brian Ward, brought a lot to that as well. Yeah. A very lot.
And another one of my personal favorites as a child was a TV show not a lot of people talk about nowadays, but I remember it well, The Littles. You were Frank Little.
That's where I met Wally Burr. And it was really close to home. My voice was a little lighter and a little thinner, and he was just kind of a Ward Cleaver, nice daddy, dad, father. We were all tiny and living under floors and in the sewers and wherever we were. But I had done a play in Los Angeles with Paul Eiding, and we both were jumping in and out of characters throughout the course of this play. Wally happened to be in the audience. Two nights of doing that play actually changed the course of the rest of my life, for real, for real. Wally saw me in the play one night, and after the play, we were already friends. He said, "I had no idea how versatile you were." He said, "I'm working on some pretty big projects that are coming up, and I'm going to keep you in mind for a broad array of possibilities." Well, that's why I read for Grimlock. It's why I read for Long Haul. It's why I read for Spirit and Firefly, and it just changed the way that he considered me from a casting opportunity. Also, in that, I was seen in that play by Gordon Hunt, who was doing all of the voice direction at Hanna-Barbera. Well, I did not know him. He had asked to say hello to me after the performance. Stage manager ran and got me, and I came out, and he said, "I just want to let you know, if you're as versatile as what we saw on stage tonight," he said, we may be interested in you at Hanna-Barbera. And it was like one of those moments where you realize an opportunity is making itself available to you from someone you don't know. I can be polite, you know, at my own expense sometimes, but I wasn't that night. And I said, "Well, you've had my demo for several months. If you could move it from the bottom of the pile to the top of the pile, I'd love to be doing what you're doing." And he said, "Geez, you got a lot of nerve, don't you?" And I said, "No, usually not. But I said, I'm not letting this opportunity pass without making you know that I would love to be doing what you're doing."
It's like, remember me. Yeah.
Not only did he not forget, but he had me in for a peripheral role the following week. He retold the story, and he said to the people in the group, "I think he's one of the new kids. I think you're going to be seeing a lot of him." Well, it changed every day of the rest of my life, career-wise. So, like I said about terminal optimism, I believe opportunities make themselves available to many of us. But if you mistake it for just another moment, it goes by. That's why they say seize it, you know, recognize it for what it is, and don't let it go past.
Don't be afraid to take risks and opportunities.
I've heard it attributed to Wayne Gretzky, but a lot of people say that someone else said it. But it's that quote about you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So take the shot.
Take the shot.
You know. Go for it.
You know, I think that's a good moment to actually point this out. I have a I know you can't personally see me right this moment, but the viewers can. I have a CD that was passed off to me by a mutual friend of ours, Mr. Chad Williams, who passed away.
Hey, rest in peace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. this is a CD that was produced by you. Think globally, act vocally, and voice virtue.
I got it too.
I think this is a phenomenal CD. I just
thanks, man.
I have listened to this a couple times, and you know, if anybody is an aspiring actor or voice actor, this is, in my opinion, required listening.
Yeah, or wants to be the best human you can be.
Yeah. You've got some great messages in here.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I believe it was the first Slagicon where you were at that you handed those out.
Right.
That's
absolutely true.
That was a great listen.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you.
I'm going to hold it up here for the viewers if they can see it. It's think globally, act vocally, and voice virtue.
Slagicon was a noble endeavor.
Yes, it was. Indeed, it was.
And it was lots of fun, too.
When I was at Slagicon, here's a couple of things just in a row. You mentioned Frank Welker. I know we're talking Transformers, but I need to talk Garfield for a moment, because I've been the voice of Odie since Lorenzo Music was the voice of Garfield. We did an awful lot of CBS Saturday morning. We lost Lorenzo Music several years ago, and may he rest in peace. And Frank took over as the voice of Garfield, putting his own, making it his own, but still kind of a tip of the hat to everything classic. And so the ultimate Transformers Trivial Pursuit, this could win you the game, is that Megatron and Grimlock are also Garfield and Odie. So
wow.
so we see each other quite a bit for that. I'm also Squeak the Mouse and Harry the Alley Cat and Hermit the Mailman and good old Odie. Wow. So even though, I mean, we cast from within, so I'm also half the town, and it's Wally Wingert and Frank and Jason Marsden, and we just have the best time.
Wally Wingert is actually Transformers alum with, he voiced Sideburn in the Robots in Disguise.
Well, the thing, we just, all of us who have turned this into careers continue to see each other often, you know. Every studio has bad coffee and good gossip, and we're never unhappy to see each other.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it's ironic you bring up the Odie character. Listener Danavision on our YouTube channel, he asked, how did you get the Odie gig for the 80s Garfield cartoon?
When they were originally casting, thus it was going from a cartoon strip to a I think we started with specials. In fact, I know that we did. I was one of a group of actors that they had in for Jim Davis, who's still a friend. By the way, that was the second of my two stories. After Slagicon, because I was already in Indiana, I had an invite to go out to Paws, which is in Muncie, where the Garfield strip is drawn, and Jim is sort of a favorite son, like David Letterman, of Muncie, Indiana. So I was able to visit them because Slagicon already put me so close. So thanks to Chad for that too. I've been there since. It's always great. Jim has been a friend. All of the staff there, you know, incredible artists and funny people and good people. Now where was I?
how you got cast as Odie?
Oh, yes. So Jim was in the room. Lee Mendelsohn was in the room, and they were reading people for all parts. And they were narrowing us down to sort of a group of their favorite people. And Jim said, we are really happy with you, and we like all of the things you've done. He said, it doesn't feel like you're Garfield, but he said, we want you to be part of this ensemble and this repertory company. And that's kind of what they were going after and trying to build. And he said, we love the way you bark and slurp Odie and have made him three-dimensional. He said, this way we know you'll be with us, you'll be part of it. And he actually said, it's a buddy comedy like Abbott and Costello or Hope and Crosby. He said, it's Garfield and Odie. It's just that one of those two buddies slobbers and makes his emotions known, but non-verbally, his intentions are clear, but he's limited to bark slurps and all manner of slobber.
And an occasional. Wow.
Sorry, I was thirsty.
Let's talk a little bit about your live action appearances. I know it shows here on IMDb, Saint Elsewhere. You had several appearances on that show back in the 80s.
Yeah, I was part of the research and development team for an ARC that went through an artificial heart replacement. So I was in the research and development team doing strange work on things. The character's name was Dr. Van...
Werner.
Werner, that's it. And as many times as I showed up, they would always sort of be passing in the hall. And then they realized... They could just say, oh, there's Dr. Van Werner without me being on camera. So it started to be more implied than present. But, that was an amazing show in its day or any day. And I did a lot of episodic television in the 80s. I did three pilots that weren't bought for series. But I've had that wonderful experience of reading for network and doing screen tests for things and episodes of other people's shows. I just did a play in Los Angeles where I had to clear some cobwebs out of my brain to fit this play in, but I'm on stage for 90 minutes and all of it's happening to me. And I had to sort of memorize the phone book in order to make it work and fit this whole play in there. So I was very pleased that I could still get back up, because stage, honestly, I love everything. And I would like to say equally, but there's something about that notion of the curtain going up. Anything can happen. Anything can go wrong. The audience is either with you or they're not. And I like all of the adrenaline of all of those things. So, I think stage is my first love. And there is no continuity like film and television, where things happen out of sequence. They happen directly in sequence. Whatever happens, happens. So I love the immediacy and the urgency of all of that. I did a film called Spaced Invaders, which still shows up. I'm very proud of that.
And that in the theater.
Here's a plug. Patrick Reed Johnson, who directed that on a lot of favors from a lot of incredibly talented people that he knew. And I was Steve W. Klembecker, the president of the Farmers Trust of Big Bean, Illinois. So even that was voice driven in Police Academy 7. I'm Yuri Talinsky from Russian police. And even though my actual ancestry goes back to Eastern Europe, it still is voice driven and is honest, but I'm able to borrow from my vocal skills to make it believable. At any rate, I love it all. I really love. I'm like Cinderella going to the ball anytime anybody puts a script in my hand. It gives me something to work on, and it's just what gets me worked up. I love it all, truly.
Yeah, there's several shows here. One of my favorite all-time series, you had a guest appearance on Quantum Leap as Harper. Yeah.
The episode is called What Price Gloria? Mm-hmm. And he just appears as a woman, and so he's looking at the world through female eyes, and we go on this big double date. You know, it's a really nice thing to be attached to. Quantum Leap has its own cult following and will forever, but it's a very high integrity show, and Scott Bakula is really good people.
Mm-hmm. Let's see here, Beethoven, the TV series. There was another. I've got to ask. And I personally missed it, but much to my discredit. But your appearance as Corn-Fed Pig on WWE Raw, you have a Monday Night Raw appearance.
Nice.
It was nice. We for those who don't know a show called Duckman, how it hasn't found its way to Adult Swim is beyond me. It was pushing the envelope at the time it came out. I think it set a trend of just incredibly fast-paced dialogue and visuals. It's really funny then, funny now. They released a DVD box set. And again, they were kind enough to have me in for the bonus reel, the special features. And so they sent me home with a bunch of them, and I watched them. And as much as it was kind of topical in its time, and it was going after sort of specific people or targets or whatever, in a fun, funny way, hip way, when you watch them now, it's like somebody else is guilty of all the same stuff already. So it feels, although it felt topical at the time we did it, it's kind of eternal. It's just the things that they talk about are just more like, you know, greed, sloth, all the things that are somebody's guilty of. Somebody's always guilty of. Anyway, really proud of that series. So I did this character named Corn-Fed. I clearly watched too many Dragnets growing up, because Corn-Fed is just the essence of just the facts, man. So Corn-Fed is keeping Duckman in line throughout the series. And WWE said, we want to plug that character in, animated into a WWE event. So he walks in and he does whatever he does. At any rate, I got to tip my hat on WWE. When does that happen? Except I think it was the first season of the show, and there's a lot of big hoopla around it. I just remembered another story attached to this. But they had for the advertisers and all of the affiliates a big event where they introduced the show. And they had drivers picking us up at hotels. They had me representing Duckman, the show Duckman. So I was there, and because they were clustering groups of celebrities to go over to this event, I was in this limousine with everybody else was a wrestler except for me. Maybe that's where the idea got born. But there was, I was in a car with The Undertaker. It seems like Randy Savage was there. At any rate, these like big hulking guys and me just like nicest people in the world. You know, they get it all out in the ring. So they're not mad at anybody most of the rest of the time. Mm-hmm. Just between travel and all of these other things that have made themselves available to me that only happen because I've had my voice attached to a lot of iconic characters at this point. So, I mean, I keep all of this just like my own personal scrapbook, this things that happen in my actual life. It was just amazing. But the other Duckman tie is I mentioned Police Academy. I was in Moscow. Shooting on location, and Duckman was in production, so they sent me with this condenser, very high quality condenser tape recorder. The directors would call me in my room in Moscow, direct me by phone, and I would record till they were happy with it and I was happy with it, and then they would FedEx the tapes that I was doing 9,000 miles away back to Los Angeles. Wow. And they used them for the working print of the show, but I got back in time, so they had me re-record everything. But they said the quality was so good that had I been delayed for any reason, they could have cut it into the show.
Wow. Amazing. Nice.
You really can be two places at one time.
Yes, you can. That is amazing. Let's see here. We're getting into a lot of, looks like early 2000s, late 90s, you started doing a lot of video games as well.
Yeah.
Lots of blockbusters on here too. Final Fantasy, number
Sir
of those.
Jack. Well, somebody had to teach that kid to play Blitzball.
The one I didn't realize, I'm
firm,
a huge.
He's a firm but fair dad.
The one I didn't realize, and I was actually going through the video games, I'm a huge GTA fan. I didn't realize you were in GTA 2.
I'm not sure that's my credit. Maybe there's a mistake. I don't think
Trey
I did
Welsh?
Anything in GTA. What you got?
Trey. It says Trey Welsh.
Let me do another. That may be somebody else.
I
wish I was.
Yeah, let me.
But hopefully. I did the Spyros. I was Hunter the Cheetah. And Brutal that's Legend. Not, and
That's now, not the only Hunter. You're also Craven the Hunter.
Yeah. Craven the Hunter on Spider-Man.
Yes, and Mysterio.
Quentin Beck, master of special effects and treachery.
Yes.
Wow, you've even done an episode of The Simpsons.
Yeah, well, see, I've been fortunate enough over 15 years to cover at the table reads and records whenever Kelsey Grammer is not available to do his Sideshow Bob character. A lot of times he's on the other coast, and during Frasier, he was very busy in production, so I was...
Which you also guessed it
on. Table reads and records, yeah, I covered Kelsey. And then he does it in post-production. At any rate, great bunch of people who I know from other stuff all over town, but anytime you can get into that room and that recording, it's all good.
Star Wars The Old Republic, looks like you did one of the screens.
Plo Koon, Rax Joris, I did Darth Maul in one of them. Die, Jedi, die!
And it looks like you returned to Grimlock in 2012 in the Fall of Cybertron game.
Yes, yeah.
Was that the first time you'd done Grimlock since G1?
No, there were things all along the way, but Fall of Cybertron was a really dark, cinematic kind of Grimlock reality that was just so cool. And they created some different challenges to his vocal abilities, and I really am proud of that effort. And then back again for Devastation.
Rise of the Darkspark?
Say again?
Yep. Rise of the Darkspark?
Rise of the Darkspark. Lockdown in Grimlock, yeah. And I came back in Robots R.I.D.
Yes.
As Stockade. Yeah, Decepticon General. Mm-hmm. So... I never want to get too far from this franchise, but like I said at the beginning, I only go where I'm invited. So it's always great when there's an opportunity to reattach.
Now you said
or stay attached.
You said at the before we went on air, according to IMDb, it has you listed for Transformers Autobot Alliance, which is a short pre-production, and that's. You're not aware of that, right?
happy to see my name, but I saw it the same as you saw it. So I guess the time will tell. I can't offer any help on that one. But
it's like you look at it, and you're like,
anytime I see my name and Grimlock's name on the same line, that's a good day.
you look on IMDb, see your name, and you're like, where's my residuals? I don't see any money from this.
It's like IMDb knows what you're doing, what you've done, and what you're going to be doing. I don't know how it's all done with smoke and mirrors. It's kind of.
Well, that means
your mother's middle name, your favorite cold cereal, your social security number, your five.
Hopefully not your social security number. That being said, speaking about things that to come, listener Lunar Fury. On YouTube asks, do you have any big voice projects upcoming that you can tell us about?
Well, I can tell you they're all entitled non-disclosure agreement. everything, it's very interesting because they of course, people are very protective of their work while it's still work. But I get so good. Hey, if you ever want a secret kept, you tell it to me because I take it to the grave. No, I mean, I observe all of these. Of course, you have to observe them. But you get so good at not talking about what you may or may not be working on that by the time something actually hits the shelf, it's like you have to convince yourself that then it's okay to talk about. That's actually part of why I stay tied to IMDb, just to find out at what point things actually get released. And they notify us that it's not only is it fine to talk about it, but of course they want you talking about it. And it's I tend to be proud of the work I do. So anytime I'm at liberty to discuss it and beat my chest and be proud of it, I do. But this non-disclosure is kind of the standard of the industry for anything that is still in the work phase.
Is there anything that has that the NDA has been lifted that you can talk about right this moment?
Some things have just and again, I saw it in the NDA. I mean, on IMDb. I got too many letters in my head and too many numbers, acronyms. Too many initials. But I'm in the new Call of Duty, and I'm, what else came out? You probably have it in front of you.
Mass Effect Andromeda.
Yeah, that's true.
And Final Fantasy 15.
That's true as well. So it's all good. Somehow I've managed to stay busy throughout my life and throughout my career, and it's not getting slower. So I'm happy anytime. I've been one of a group of we were talking about looping and ADR earlier. On some of the Pixar films, I have been part of a group that just sort of fills in the atmosphere around what's going on foreground. But I did that for Inside Out and a few others. So Monsters University. So it's all good. Oh, and speaking of monsters, I was also the Grumble on Our Real Monsters. Ooh, do these red pumps make me look fat? It is Crumb O'Blina. You're late for class. See, I get some anger management out at work too.
Absolutely.
So you mentioned Inside Out. So you were just additional side voices and things.
Yeah, exactly. Like third monster from the left, third this from the right. They would just sort of fill spaces so the entire frame is full, and it layers dialogue throughout.
Kind of a fun coincidence. I actually just met Lewis Black last week.
Great.
I work out at the Indianapolis airport there, and he was just there eating a cheeseburger. that was pretty cool. I run into people every once in a while. Usually wrestlers. That's the easiest to spot. You know, it's kind of hard to miss people that big.
His material is so great, and so he's managed to channel his anger into an act.
Yes.
I think he's fantastic.
Jack, do you have any questions?
No, but I do apologize for that GTA thing. I guess somebody just had it off, so I'll have to check that again.
No worries. Sometimes there's errors too.
Yeah.
So,
no questions.
So
I've got a couple that were submitted to me on Facebook here. Listener Ronnie Burke, he was asking what your favorite character was that you've done the voice for. I assume that means it in general. I don't know if it's Transformer specific.
Yeah, I can't tell you which of my children is my favorite. I can't tell you which part is my favorite. Now, I'm not trying to be goody-goody or avoid the question. It's just, you know, they're all. I mean, the ongoing series regular characters. You know, and I'm allowed to be Eeyore in the Hundred Acre Wood from time to time as well. And I've been doing that off and on for the past number of years. Peter Cullen does it also, an illustrator at Pixar named Bud Lucky has been doing a lot of it most recently. But, you know, I have such love for so many of the characters. But, you know, Grimlock, for sure. Odie and Squeak the Mouse and all those characters, for sure. It's just that much time in any character. And you don't just remember the character. You remember the experience. You remember the people. You remember the engineers and the producers. So I just kind of have them all as like one big happy family. I can't put one out in front. You know, Cornfed is amazing for me and to me. But I can't pick one. That'd be crazy.
So they're all your favorites for different reasons.
Exactly.
Pretty right. Much, yeah.
Unique exactly kind of right.
And then another question I had submitted to me was from a friend of mine who was at SlagaCon, Nathaniel Laska. He was asking exactly how many drugs was Orson Pig on when he made every book he read come to life right there on the farm.
I think it was a powerful mixture of gasoline, a clean windshield, and a shoe shine. That's fire sign theater. But hey, Orson was pretty close to home too. He was very neutral, and he had, I tell you, Orson had to be thinking straight because he had to talk Wade down off the ledge every episode. Yes. Wade, you're afraid of everything made. I've never seen anything like it.
I absolutely love those segments.
It's a good question.
So let's. I'm trying to think. There are several things we've had done on the show here before. If you could. I know you've told us many stories, but back in the Generation 1 days, a lot of people love hearing stories from the recording booth. Everybody's heard the one about Frank Welker sitting over in the corner and making a phone call, dropping the change in and everything. Love that story. Do you have any stories that stand out to you that you remember to this day?
Well, I mean, I told you earlier that occasionally Scatman would bring his ukulele, and that was just like, you know, let that go on forever. And just people's stories and life stories. But, you know, it can't not go to Frank, because Frank could also make sound effects that made the people on the other side of the glass think that the whole board was arcing and people dove for cover. He just... Frank always said, well, you know, it loosens the tension in the room. And so he would just do things off the top of his head that sounded like fun to him at the moment. And he could also throw his voice. So not only could he make the sound of all of the change going into the telephone, but he could do the voice on the other end of the phone as well as his own.
He's got such a booming voice. And everything. I remember the BotCon in St. Charles a couple years back whenever he was inducted into the Transformers Hall of Fame.
Correct.
And they had him come in, and we were sitting in the banquet dinner, and he gets up to the microphone, and whenever he speaks in Megatron's voice, it just sent chills down my arm. It's like to be in the same room, hearing him boom that commanding evil Megatron voice, that maniacal Megatron voice. It just, I can't imagine hearing it every day in the booth, you know. And to that effect, just hearing you do Grimlock's voice is it has the same effect. You know, Optimus Prime, whenever I'll never forget, the Lexington, BotCon, whenever he sits there on the panel and he just leaned over into the mic and the sound of Optimus Prime coming over the loudspeakers, it just brought the kid in me back to life.
That's the goal. That's the highest form of compliment, for real.
You know, I
So it's like frosted mini wheats for your ears.
Well, you know, I've told
kids,
this story.
Don't try this at home. Don't put frosted mini wheats in your ears.
I've told this story many times here on the podcast and several voice actors. I know I actually made Michael McConaughey cry telling him this story. But my connection to Transformers as a kid, I was 10 years old in 85, and I contracted a rare heart disease at the time. And I was hospitalized, couldn't run and play like other kids, you know, because of this heart disease. And so I was stuck in the house a lot. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I love Transformers to this day is it reminds me of a simpler time whenever I didn't have a whole lot as a child to look up to and be happy about. But there was something that whenever I came home from school every day and I could turn on the television and I could watch Transformers, and the voices that you guys put to these characters meant so much to me, and it gave me such happiness as mm-hmm. a child that I will never forget that. I turned 42 in 2 weeks, and I still to this day cherish that memory. And it's a testament to the work that you guys did some 30 years ago. And I want to thank you personally for the work that you did. And you are one of the iconic characters, Grimlock. You know, that you're one of the top five, you know, of all time in just in general fandom. But to me, you know, Grimlock is probably my third favorite character, you know, outside of Weird Wolf, but he didn't really have a characterization. I love that character, and you guys did so much, and you were there putting your hearts and souls and making your throats bleed, and it was not for naught. It was not for naught, you know. And here we are 30 years later, and we're talking over the internet face to face about this wonderful thing that is Transformers.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, and there is another question here, Lunar Fury.
Well, hold on. First, I want to say I'm sorry for your challenges. We talked earlier about sort of the clear-cut nature of sort of light and dark, good and evil on the show, and that need to challenge for Autobots to challenge Decepticons, Decepticons to challenge Autobots. But if that gave you any strength that got you to triumph, as you clearly did and have and continue to do, let me simply say, my pleasure!
So, and it did. I mean, it gave me such happiness as a kid. I mean, I actually look back on my childhood, and I don't think of a dark, dim time, because I had something to keep me happy, and it was Transformers.
Bravo. That,
you know, a lot of people have different things, you know. And today, you know, I've stayed drug and alcohol free my entire life because I've had a basis. You know, everybody has something to turn to whenever life gets hard. And as we all know, as an adult, you know, times get challenging, and you know, you come home from work sometimes and you wonder, why do I keep doing this? You know, there's got to be a release. For me, it's coming into this room full of these plastic toys. You know, while I don't sit on the ground and go vroom vroom with them anymore, they represent, they're a physical representation of the characters that I cherish and love.
I just want to point out, Duran said he doesn't put them on the floor and go vroom vroom anymore.
No.
I think we know better, but nice try.
Yeah, yeah.
No, he brings them up onto the desk now.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm just kind of slumping down on my chair now.
Yeah. Of course you do.
It's like I look around and
that's why the door locks from the inside.
Yep.
How did you know that?
I don't know.
Lucky guess.
Lunar Fury, he asks another question. Do you have any crazy adventure stories with the incomparable Chris Latta, Starscream?
Well, every story with Chris, I mean, I had enormous respect for him. And although I can't tell you any, like, ridiculous story, it's just I've never known anyone in my experience who had that much just push. And I think if he was my introduction to giving 150% every minute, every time. And I think it's just because he had this fire in his belly. You could feel it. You could see it. He had like a energy aura around him, and he put it all into his work. And I think he could have, I just think somebody with that much fire and drive, if they don't have a creative place to put it, that they really run the risk of finding a non-creative place to put it. But he just was, he was driven. That motor was running hot all the time. He had real strong opinions on things, but it's just like, it's almost like he's one of those people that is so powerful just in his existence that he would kind of test people when he first met him. And if you pass the test and don't be intimidated by him and just sort of get him, then you're his best friend forever. But I mean, I wouldn't want to be a person in a department store waiting on him. I think he probably could just do without people that he can do without. And he probably was a very difficult customer. He may have been a difficult lots of things, but when he had those characters, because I did G.I. Joe with him also, when he had that as a place to put that energy, it was just astonishing to watch him work. And just watch him in general. He was a really powerful presence, very powerful presence. That's a better way to put it.
Jack, do you have let me ask you, what is your favorite Grimlock moment?
Was that to?
Actually just had him on the figure here, but I'm starting to take him off. It was pretty much the waiter moment from the episode. Can't think of it. It was when I saw him in that, I'm like, I hope to make a toy of it, or at least some sort of accessory. And I had a Big Bad Toy Store spree last year, and one of the first
things... You want fries with that?
One of the first things I wanted to get was Grimlock, and I completely forgot they had the waiter outfit, and I took a picture, uploaded it to Facebook. I'm like, this is the greatest scene in Transformers I've ever seen, and the greatest gimmick of a toy ever.
So do you have any one favorite line that sticks out as for Grimlock?
It was from the movie. Obviously cesium salami and beryllium baloney, but because it's like him and Slag just going at it. It was just set me laughing every time I see it. And then obviously the whole skit with Cup and the Dinomots and him Cup telling stories, and that was funny. It always got me every time.
Tell Grimlock about Petro Rabbits.
Yep.
Me love Cup's war stories.
You know, that's the one thing about Grimlock is that he has so many lines throughout the entire franchise that's why I'm asking everybody if you have a favorite Grimlock line, which one particular one stands out to you. I mean, when you think Grimlock, Jim, what's one of yours?
Me, Grimlock kick butt. Absolutely, that's got to be the pinnacle one
from the movie, kicking Unicron in the behind.
Of course.
Me Grimlock no bozo. Me king. Yes. Me kick butt.
I mean, for a little kid in the 80s to be watching a cartoon, watching Transformers, you know, with family in the theater, and Grimlock says butt. I mean, you lose it. It's great.
Kick butt. I really liked in Grimlock's New Brain at the very beginning, whenever Grimlock's up in the control station and he's trying to find the right control switch to pull, and then he looks up and sees one. And he's like, "Me Grimlock like this one gonna pull," you know, and he pulls it. You're like, "No." just so many, and there's also from between season two, he goes from a more aggressive, belligerent Grimlock to a more playful Grimlock, from the movie onwards. And just that range of him, you know, I mean, he goes from this very forceful voice, and still maintains it in season three, but he's more lighthearted, and it just gives you so much more to love about that character, you know. Whereas,
and in my case, more to play. I tend not to question scripts or say my character wouldn't say. I just find a way to make it part of the truth of the character, or that's what I've always done. That's kind of my code.
I mean, it's made it believable, because even though his characteristics kind of changed throughout the series, it stayed the same, if that makes any sense. I mean, you made it flow in a way that, okay, I can believe this is just a part of that character's persona that I didn't realize was there before. And I think that's the best way to put it. Danavision says, "Me Grimlock need new strategy." the Grimlock and Wheelie banter from the movie.
"My boy hit my nose."
Yeah. Blushes after he gets kissed by the junkie.
Yeah. I think my absolute favorite out of all the Grimlock lines was whenever they bust down the door. Hot Rod and Cup have been smashing some Sharktacons in the animated movie, and Grimlock stomps his foot and say, "Me Grimlock say execute them." I just, that was that rah-rah moment, you know, you gotta throw a fist bump in the air, you know.
Yeah, it's enough.
Yeah. So, anything you would like to tell the fans?
Just my unending gratitude, because the unseen member of the ensemble is the audience that embraced it and continues to be so incredibly adaptable as far as the twists and turns of the franchise itself. The opportunities I've had, I mean, most of my convention appearances have been probably inspired by the convention's interest in Transformers aspect of my credits. So I think it's opened a door for me to see a lot of the world and to meet people from a lot of the world and to gain a sense of how global, cosmic, and universal this appeal is. You know, I've flown thousands of miles, sat down at a signing table, and seen a line around the room of people that not only have I never met, but I never sort of envisioned having the opportunity to meet. That's incredible to me. And I don't take it lightly, and I am sort of empowered and humbled at the same time anytime that opportunity comes up for me. I really love it, and I don't mistake the importance and contribution of every single member of fandom. It's phenomenal, through a lot of casts and a lot of changes and a lot of twists and turns. And yet it's like being part of this extraordinary global family. I mean, I'm sure there's a Cybertronian chapter too, but Planet Earth has been very, very good to me. and I appreciate it.
Absolutely. You know, I took the opportunity to wear my Grimlock shirt today. I'm wearing the Me Grimlock Here to Save Universe. it's a throwback like to the 50s, has the globe helmet on there. I just love this shirt. Got it at Ripped Apparel. And Ripped Apparel is actually running a special right now, and we're helping them out here at TFYLP. You can save 10%. On your orders at Ripped Apparel by using the code TFYLPPOD, all capital letters. So go to rippedapparel.com and find, you should be able to find this awesome Grimlock t-shirt on there still. And use TFYLPPOD and save 10% on your order. Mr. Berger, I want to thank you so much for joining us this evening. I want to ask you also if you could stick around a few minutes after we go off air here. I want to talk to you a little bit. But I want to thank you on behalf of all the fans for joining us on TFYLP. It is such an honor to have you on the show.
My pleasure. Hey, my pleasure. And my pleasure.
Jim, you or Jack, either one have any closing thoughts or questions?
I had a chance to look up that one episode Jack was talking about a minute ago. That was Madman's Paradise.
Yeah, it was
Daniel's involved Dream. A character called the Golden One. If I recall, Greg also did the voice for him too.
Yes.
I believe. I'm not sure. That I don't remember. I mean, yes, I've seen it. I've seen it depicted, but I don't remember how he sounded.
You know, there's a question.
Stump me.
I don't know if there. I don't know if you actually know the answer to this question or not. But there was a character, I believe, in season two, during Megatron's Master Plan. A character name is a human character named Sean Berger. Was that character named after you? Do you know?
I'll talk to Flint, but I would have to hope so. Yeah, that'd be great.
Because I know sometimes they name characters based. Star Trek did it a lot. Would name characters based on like cast and crew, and their actual names and everything. I didn't know if that was one of those instances in Transformers. Because every time I hear that name, I'm like, I wonder.
I'm gonna hope so.
You'll have to get back with us on that on a later episode.
That'd be great.
Absolutely, Jack. Did you have any closing questions or thoughts?
Not that I can think of.
Awesome. Well, once again, I want to thank you, Mr. Berger, for joining us. And thanks, everyone, for joining us on TFYLP for this special time. Join us next week at our normal time at 8 p.m. on our YouTube channel right here. You can follow us on Twitter at TFYLP or join us on our Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/TFYLP. Where we talk all things Transformers and TFYLP podcast. We share news about toys, movies, cartoons, all kinds of great things. Awesome. All things Transformers. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this week. And thank you, Mr. Berger. We will see you next time on TFYLP.
Really pleasant. Thanks for having
me. Thank you, sir.
This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening. And we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.